If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
Hey guys, and welcome to Personality Bingo with me, your host, Tom Moran. So this week on the podcast, we have the brilliant Peter McGann. Peter is an actor, a comedian, a writer. He has a show coming up at the Workman's Club. It's called Pulp Injection. It's got an incredible cast behind it. Laura Brady, Giles Brody, Tony Cantwell, Stephen Considine, Finbar Doyle, Amy Dunn, Ali Fox, Owen Lyons, John Morton, Kelly Shatter. It's going to be unreal. It's August 14th. Downstairs in the Workman's Club, doors are at 8 and the show is at 8:30. It's going to be absolutely deadly. And tickets are available on Eventbrite. Go and check it out because Peter just is one of the funniest guys. If you don't believe me, he has a ton of sketches on YouTube. Loads of stuff. He collaborated with like pretty much all of the funny heads across Dublin. And it's a pleasure to have him on the podcast. In other news, apologies, there were a couple of issues with the Paul Howard episode that got out a little bit late because of that, and we were just having awful trouble uploading it, but go back and check that out too. It's a deadly episode, possibly the interview I'm most proud of on Personality Bingo. Go and check that out. Creator of Ross O'Carroll Kelly and Copperface Jacks the musical, speaking of which, closes this weekend. So as you hear this episode, if you're listening on the Sunday, we will be closing our show that night. There are a couple of tickets left for the two Sunday shows at 3 and at 6. The rest of the week's been completely sold out. Kind of amazing to perform to over 1,200 people every night at the Olympia Theatre in a show about a nightclub on Harcourt Street. But that's what we've been doing, and it's been one of the best summers of my life doing it. I'm not going to lie, it's been incredible. And if you're one of the people who got to see it, fair play to you and thanks for coming in. In other news, if you want my dulcet tones for your business, for anything like that, I've now been represented by voicebank.ie. So check out my webpage there, I suppose, for dulcet tones, etc., etc., as if this nonsense wasn't enough, you know. So enough of all that, guys. Please enjoy the brilliant Peter McGann playing Personality Bingo with Tom Moran. Peter McGann, ready to play Personality Bingo?
I sure am.
All right, sweet, let's do it. So a quick explainer of how it all works. I've got 60 minutes on the clock, 60 balls in here, and 60 corresponding questions. I've also given you 5 numbers in that little sheet of paper. Would you do me a favour, read out the 5?
9, 56, yeah. 30, 19, and 48.
Nice one. Do me another favour, pick a 6th one, something between 1 and 60 that's not already there.
Huh? Between 1 and 60?
Yeah.
Wow.
What are you going to go for?
Will I tell you?
Yeah, please.
All right. 54.
Decisive. Any reason?
72 was the first number that came to my head. And they're both, what are they in timetables?
Eight timetables,
yeah. So I think that's how that came about.
No, they're not, because 54 is actually not.
Six.
Would have been 56. Look at us being silly boys.
Silly me, silly you.
And I should say that if all 6 of them numbers do come out, that means the tables are turned and you get to ask me any question in the whole wide world.
If any of these numbers come out.
No, for all of them.
Oh, for all of them. Oh, yeah.
I mean, the odds aren't in your favour.
They sure aren't.
But fuck it. Let's give it a spin. All right, here we go. First out the gate, we have number 8. Do you have it?
No.
No worries. Number 8. Oh, do you have any irrational fears?
Do I have any irrational fears? When I was a kid, I did. I used to be scared of any Disney or cartoon woman villain that had like big kind of mad red lips for some reason. Yeah, I used to have a recurring dream where when I was really little that these beautiful women would pick me up and tickle me and I'd fall asleep and they'd bite my head off.
Really?
Yeah. So that's, and then it was, I think it was something to do with that, or that reminded me of the dream. So whenever I saw like Cruella de Vil or one of those, I didn't like it. You're one in Sword and Stone, freaked out. The one in the, she's like an old witch but she turns kind of sexy at one point, and I didn't mind the old witch, but she went kind of like sexy. They were like freaked out.
Wow. What about when did it go?
Ah, jeez, I don't know.
Like, do you have any, like, you know, any remnants of it now? You see a lovely lady with lipstick.
I think she's gonna bite my head off.
Yeah.
No. Thankfully. Although I'm sure it has like massively impacted my life in unconscious ways.
Mm.
And probably why I'm a bad person.
How do you feel about the Joker in Batman?
Yeah, I didn't mind it as much because I remember the old Batman cartoon, like a really old one. Yeah, he was grand because I didn't really properly come to Batman stuff till later in life. So it didn't bother me. I was over it. I was over my fear of big red lips.
That's so interesting.
That Mae West couch lose my damn mind over it though.
Is it? Do you think it's something anything to do with the fact that you associate like blood with the lipstick and that like they've done this before?
I don't know. I don't know.
Sorry,
I
want
to.
I want to. I want to like uncover all the shit.
I assume it's something to do with mothers. No, I don't know. It's one of those. Maybe I just was intimidated by really put together, lovely women at a very young age, like toddler age.
Yeah. It's really it is weird about, you said like jokingly like it's about mothers, but like it is real weird that like mothers are such a like a thing. Like obviously it's a pretty fucking worn out fact now, but like that, like, you know, MILF porn would be like the most viewed porn of them all. Like it's just a really weird thing that like I know people kind of talk about it, but like I don't really understand it the way I should, like, and all this Freud stuff. It's fucking mad.
I mean, it's just because it's the most nurturing, well, for most people it's the most nurturing person you ever knew. And sometimes she's a bait. No, that's what's your kind of first exposure to women and that kind of thing. And then just gets, then hormones kick in and then it just sets people wild.
Yeah, it's true. Did your mom know about this lipstick fear?
I don't think so. Yeah, maybe. I think my folks, I might have not told them in so many words, but I definitely freaked out. I used to cry when you're watching a game show or chat show like The Late Late and you didn't see the audience and the audience would clap and cheer, or a sitcom and it'd be like audience laughter, and when I was like 2 years old, I'm watching TV and I'd start to cry because I couldn't see these people that were screaming and crying and laughing and clapping, and it'd freak me out.
Yeah,
I don't think that's anything to do with mothers though.
They're great answers, man.
And also one more thing, yeah, because this sounds like I'm making it up about the women. And then it'll sound like I'm even more making up, but I swear this is true. The other recurring dream I had, nightmare I had, was gorillas living underground, like in kind of badger sets or rabbit holes. And they reach out and they grab you and drag you in. Try and drag me in down the ground with them. That was my two recurring nightmares.
Whoa.
Yeah. A very masculine one compared to a feminine one.
It is, yeah. You did just make that up just to overcompensate.
I swear to God I didn't. I know. Life.
Yeah, I mean, and it's that weird thing. Remember there was the kid that went in with the gorilla and they shot the gorilla recently enough? Mm-hmm. It's weird, like, that happens.
Yeah, you think, ever since Jurassic Park, you just think, why don't they just have, like, trank guns?
Yeah. I mean, I was walking by a pet shop the other day, and like, I don't know, I was a little bit hungover, I won't lie, and I just kind of, do you ever just get like one of the moments where you just zoom out accidentally, and I was just kind of like, this is absurd, we have pet shops, like, there's a lot, and I'm not even like, you know, the way some people would be like, I'd never go to the zoo because I don't want to support, I'm not even, and I think that's totally brilliant, but that's just not one of the battles that I've chose to fight in this world, so I'm not even like a big animals rights activist, right? But like, I was just kind of like, this is mental, there's alive creatures in here, and we'll give them this thing called money and we can have them. Like,
just to show how in control we are as humans.
It's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny. Right, let's give it a spin. All right, here we go. Number 32. Do you have it?
No.
No.
Whoa, do it. No.
Number 32. Oh, tell us about someone who you greatly admire.
Mother Teresa. No. Who I greatly admire. Jesus. Anyone in the game, anyone who's doing what we're doing and is making a go of it.
Yeah.
Seeing people, I admire people when they're, who slug it out, because I think a lot, because when you take a day job, you feel like, maybe I'm taking the easy route there, but people who put their head down and stick it through and plow on, and whether it comes up or not, who knows, but for them or not, but people like that, I do.
Yeah, so when you took the day job, did you feel a bit like you were kind of breaking rank a little bit or something?
Yeah, for sure. I thought that this was a point of no return in many ways. This was when I took a job a year ago. I'm in a new job now, but it's the same job. And it's just, so you do feel, breaking rank's a great way of putting it. It's just like, well, I'm a coward.
But, okay, so then a year of like having lived that life, what's your perspective on it now?
Oh, I'm probably more productive than I've ever been. And that's probably because I'm not worrying about other things as much, but and also that I am overly conscious about time and how much of it I have.
Mm. Do you ever think about what the thing would have to be for you to leave that day job? Is that even a possibility? Like,
well, it's a possibility in terms of like if I got
Really successful. Contractually and stuff like.
Contractually? What do you mean?
Like, so like, let's just say, right, you were like, if you got really successful, like, let's just say in the morning someone was to come up and be like, hey, we want you to do this, like, you know, TV series is going to shoot for 3 months. We'll need you every day.
Yeah, see, I think I'd have to. I think, obviously, 3 months is nothing in terms of like, but if I had a feeling about it, I don't know until it's like presented to me, and no one's presenting it to me just yet. But it would be. If I did turn it down, it would be bad. I wouldn't come back from it for a while. That would lay me out low.
Yeah,
I had to turn down stuff, and it like it broke me. Like I was in like. To the point where I couldn't function in work, or and it took a while to get over. And it's like, so I would say that would happen. I'd say I would if I had to turn something down. Yeah, you'd be laid low for a while, but I would probably just pack it in the first chance I got. It was like a case of like, yeah, you're gonna be in this deadly thing for 3 months, and it's gonna be deadly, and it might not come of it after. But yeah, I'd be hard pressed not.
Do you find yourself being like just happier now that you, as you said, you don't have to worry about like, you know, the let's just call it the financial side of things as much as you would have done like before you took the day job? Were you making a go of it just from doing comedy and acting and writing and whatever it is?
I was doing all those things. I wasn't necessarily making a go of it. I had somewhat steady work every now and again. I'd be doing like Republic Italy and stuff like that, and every now and then, you know, it was like every now and again something would come along. But for me, I wasn't someone who was taken along. You think I get the hint? Which I kind of did. So I took the job. But I just started trying to move into somewhere that you're still doing what you want to do to a degree, but you're making something of it, which is what copywriting is, which is what I do. I mean, it's not what I want to be doing, but it is, you know, it's close-ish to it.
But it's funny that even you say that, like the last year, I mean, I don't know how long I would know you, but I would have been like aware of you. But I feel like I've seen you more around the place, like doing different things over the last year than I would have before. It's just interesting.
It's because I feel like I have to be doing. That's how I was beforehand. I had to be doing things. I've got this thing where I'll just say yes to most things, because when you want to do something and you see, and your fans. I'm a fan. Mainly, I'm a fan of people who make. Not. I'm not just talking about like. You know, big name people. But I'm a fan. If someone makes something that's cool, I want to work with, even if they're, you know, some fucking 18-year-old student or something like that. They do some funny sketch or some little short or something. Like, I'll just seek it out. So I just say yes to pretty much everything. And that hasn't abated that much since I took the job. Mm. I've just kind of had to try and fit it around the thing. So that's why, like, I'm in less things. Maybe what I say is, I've tried to make the things count more that I do. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why you're seeing me more. Whereas before, I was just popping up in anything that would have me.
Yeah.
Like sketches. Stuff like that.
Yeah, but like I don't mean this in like a patronizing. I just think it's genuinely a better choice to do a thing that like can... I think, as you said, I think you'll just be better at what you do if you can do it without the pressure of being like, oh, fuck, I don't know, like if I can... make rent. I know it sounds obvious, but like seriously, like I think that's genuinely a more honorable way of doing it than like fucking being like anxious and stressed about it the whole time.
Well, there are people who can do that. There's people who can do that. There's like the true artists who will have their will have the exact same stresses as anyone else if they were in that position, but that drives them in a way. That the thing is like, well, I'll always have my art. I'll always have whatever my craft, whatever it is I do. At least I have that. I'll keep tipping away at that. And that'll, you know, I'll get some and hopefully something will land. Whereas me, it just got to the point where I was like, I'm not as strong a person as that, where I was like, if I wake up and I have a clean slate ahead of me, maybe I'll sit down and write something, but it's a lot easier to just be stressed and sad about things that you're missing out on, because you have to pay rent, or you can't do. So it's for me, it's not a, I wouldn't recommend it to everyone. And also, it's for people basically who don't have enough faith in themselves and what they're doing, and they just want to be able to enjoy what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because it's easy for the joy to get sucked out of it if that's all there is, and you're kind of stressed about other things.
Yeah, like, because that's interesting what you say about like not having the faith in it. Like, because it is that an element of it for you that you were just kind of like,
oh yeah, I think anyone who's not a like narcissistic gimp is gonna be thinking that they're not worthy enough or not good enough. I see. Yeah, there's no. I mean, you have to have a basic. There are things that you know that you're good at. I'm sure you're the same. Like, there's things you know that, oh, I can do that, falling off a log. But for other stuff, you're just like, for the bigger picture stuff, you're just like, I don't know if this is a feasible thing for me. I don't know if I'm good enough. You know, I can do X decent enough, and all the rest of it is hard work, but maybe I can go with it, but I still have to put in the work, and maybe it won't work out. So it is, you have to kind of have that kind of doubt, otherwise you're a monster.
Yeah, and do you look into the future then and think about like what, like, do you see yourself in 5 years still working a copywriter job or something comparable?
Realistically, absolutely.
Okay.
Realistically, absolutely. But you know, I'd like to, you know, it'd be nice to have sold a script or two or something like that along the way, where it gives you a little bit more of a, a trajectory along the career, I guess. Mm. The wanted career. The
yeah. Career or whatever. And then what is it the thing that then is like, why don't you just stop it like altogether and just be like, well, I could, like, you know, rather than spend like my free time, I don't know, making a sketch that mightn't even get out there, whatever the thing is, like, rather than that versus like, I don't know what the fucking thing is, but like, like saving for a holiday or something. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's it. That's because I don't want to do it. That's why I just want to be making stuff all the time. I just want to be writing stuff and popping up in other people's things every now and again. Just that's all I want to be at. Writing, directing, ideally as well, like me also, and like popping up in people's things. That's all I want to be at.
Mm.
So like, there's no question that that's what I spend my free time doing.
Yeah.
As it is now. That is my free time, as opposed to all the time. But yeah, no, there's
what
I do.
What are the differences between between you, because you have loads of friends who do this kind of thing. What are the differences between you and your friends who do it like full time, don't do another thing, they just are like professionally creative, they don't do another thing. The friends who are in your position where they like do both, they've had periods where they've just been doing that, they've had periods where they've been working day jobs, and then the people who are, you know, really creative, that's a big part of their lives, and then they're just like, fuck it, I'm not doing it anymore because it's too hard. Can you, like, do you see like similarities and differences between those three strands of people?
I haven't really thought about it. Most of my friends who are most of my friends are people who do it full time, who are, whether they are making a living off full time or whatever, some are, but they're just wholly committed to maybe working in a cafe or in a pub or labouring, whatever it may be. That's most people, I think. There's people, I've got very little, but like maybe like one friend who has a job that they're kind of happy and like steadily progressing kind of job, but they do stuff, they do creative stuff outside of it.
Mm.
That's what I'm so jealous of, because I can't be that person where it's just like, yeah, I'll just write a thing and perform at an open mic night once every couple of months, and they'll get such satisfaction out of it. And that's them. That's their creative, and they're brilliant, and they're all the rest of it. Whereas that is just not enough for me or for yourself. You know, we'd look at that and be like, I wish I could have reached that point. It's like people who do like Amdram.
Mm.
You're from Meath. You, Amdram, sorry. Like, did you do that when you were young?
Yeah.
We were part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that thing. I worked with like amazing actors at Amdram, but they all are just, you know, they have day jobs and lives, and that's enough for them to be doing the field or to be doing whatever the hell. You know, and that's amazing. That's but I just can't have that. I just need to be properly doing it and making a stamp and making going along. But they're the people I envy the most, I think, because they have that, like.
I totally agree. I think that's like by far and away the best way to do it, because they all have, you know, like good jobs and like they can afford to, you know, buy a house or do the family thing, but they'll also, yeah, they go out and like they perform in front of fucking like possibly 400 people, you know what I mean?
So many people.
Like on their own terms, and they can go to like do it in, like they have their different societies. They can go do a show in Navan, or then they could go do a show in fucking like Coolmine or Tala or, you know, wherever it is. Even, and that, like that, you can do, and you can do it anywhere in the country. You can do that in Cork or Galway or fucking Longford. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
And they're never going to do something they don't want to do. Obviously, there's somewhat of a consensus in we go, oh, we're doing this show this year, this year. But as a rule, they're not going to be like, well, I have to take this job because I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to sell my soul. They're just doing it because it's pure and fun and so satisfying. And it'll always be all those things for those people. You know, which is, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Big time. Right, let's give it another spin. All right, here we go. Number 13. Do you have it?
No.
No worries. Number 13. Oh, yeah. this is kind of an interesting one. Do you believe in love at first sight?
Oh, yeah, to a degree. Obviously, like, I believe that you can feel something very, very strong to the point where it's more, it's not, or more than, like, you know, lust. You see something like pure, like, raw kind of thunderbolt lust. But then I think there is something a bit above that where you're like, oh, I get a sense of that person, or I get a vibe, or definitely. I don't think it's... That's love at first sight, is that kind of like catch-all term where, oh, that's my soulmate over there.
Mm.
But like, I definitely think you can feel a connection of someone. Mm-hmm. Be like, obviously stalkers say that as well.
Yeah, well, maybe.
But I do, yeah. I do, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, do you have someone in your head when you say that you can like remember where you've seen them and what they were?
100%.
Yeah. One person, or like, does it happen multiple times?
Just one, really. But like,
yeah, me too. One person I can remember that with. It's kind of funny. It's a weird thing, like, because you were saying you see someone, I just started immediately just thinking of, like, you seeing the, you know, she had big red lipstick on, and, like, but it's a funny thing, because I think people, like, I remember having an argument with a friend of mine about, do you know 500 Days of Summer? Mm-hmm. You seen that movie?
Yeah.
It's a good movie. I think she was probably more right now in hindsight, but she was saying how, like, that movie and like movies like that, like, really influenced the way, like, she, I don't know, like, understood like relationships and romance or love or whatever the thing was. And I was like, that's fucking stupid. Like, no, you don't. But like, now when you think about it, because even what you were saying, it's a catch-all term and all that, but like, is that true? Like, do you think we learn like how to even like ask people out from like films and shit rather than the other way around? Obviously they're written like, it started that way, like, because they, like, it was being written about like people were trying to, you know, give life to their experience. But now, like, I'm trying to think back and like when I like first would have like asked someone out or something, and you're basing it off what you've seen on the telly.
I guess when you're a teenager, yeah, that does play into it. But I think when you're older, I think it's really, really mundane and boring and quiet the way things happen.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's very cinematic at all or interesting.
Yeah.
But I just think those things happen. I don't know. Like, I don't know how it works now with Tinder and all that shit. But like, yeah, I just can't. That's a whole new thing that I just can't imagine. I'd say it's even further removed from that whole thing. But I think it's just kind of quiet and boring and not very cinematic.
Have you ever been on Tinder, any of those things?
No, never in my life. I've been on my friends, two of my mates and my brother's Tinder for the gas, just swiping while they're looking over my shoulder. And I was like, oh my God, I see the appeal of this. For a lad, forget about it. But I've also, all of them have been like, oh no, eventually it's a waking nightmare. And we delete it from our phones. We delete our accounts or uninstall or whatever. And it's, so I absolutely see the raw appeal of it.
Yeah.
But I also, it doesn't sound like it's fun in the long term necessarily.
Mm. What about then, you were saying earlier about mentioning, you know, love to like sell a script or two, like that'd be a cool thing to do. When you like write those kind of things? I don't mean this to be a limiting question, but like, what sort of stuff are you interested in? Because for me, I'm kind of interested in like, you know, I mean, rom-com sounds like such a, like, it makes it sound shit.
It doesn't. Rom-coms, I know people, and it's easy to rag on rom-coms, but there's some of the best films ever made are rom-coms.
No, totally. But like, that's kind of what I'm interested in, like, is comedy, drama, sort of like.
I love that stuff. It's getting a bit of a bad rap now, maybe. And it does every now and again, but I know it's. I think that stuff is great. Are you kind of like me, where you have a pretty, when push comes to shove, you're pretty tunnel vision. There's loads of stuff I like. There's loads of stuff I want to try, but in terms of what's inherently in you or whatever, it's very kind of tunnel vision. And for me, it's like, men, I'm just like, and it's the worst time in probably history to be interested in writing about masculinity, because it's the least cool thing. But it is just the most inherently fascinating thing to me, especially because I write comedy stuff. Just confused, stupid men, and I like being as incisive as I can while still being funny. But I'm intrigued by it. I love it so much.
Yeah. And like, then add on to that, is Irish men another level onto that again?
Yeah. I mean, that's par for the course, I guess, because that's all I know. But I can't imagine more fascinating subject than Irish men.
Yeah.
And there are so many types of Irish men, I just do not get on with it. But I'm fascinated by them. I love writing about them. And it's a very, like I said, it's incredibly limiting, both because of geographically and culturally right now. But it's I love it so much. It's fascinating to me.
So
is the other stuff. I wrote a play with an all-female cast recently. So it's like, I am not just that, but when it comes, my ground zero or my, that's what I am interested in, what I keep coming back to, I guess.
Because that is interesting what you're saying about just like culture at the moment, how that's not like the fashionable thing, even if you're to just like factually speaking, look at the stuff RT have been making lately, be like Nowhere Fast, mm-hmm. Can't Cope, Won't Cope, mm-hmm. Striking Out, even. They're just the three things that popped in my head in the most recent thing. They're all like female driven, which is brilliant because, you know, obviously.
Nowhere Fast is one of the best Irish comedies I have ever seen. Nowhere Fast blew me away.
Really?
Yeah, there's a scene in like a later episode. I keep telling people about it, and I messaged some of the guys, the two actors in the scene. I messaged them about it. It's a scene in a garage. I won't say any more in case you haven't seen it and you have to watch it.
I know which one. Yeah.
My jaw was on the floor. Like that was. I loved the whole show anyway, but that single scene just went into my Hall of Fame. Like,
yeah,
scene, piece of writing and acting. I just loved it so much. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's like. But that's a good, like, I'm not sitting here bemoaning that. But like,
absolutely.
It's just funny to me because I'm like, I couldn't be in a worse position. But like then, like I said, like I'm writing other stuff that is not those things.
But also, like that has to turn as well. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think it will. There's always going to be scope. It's not like no one's letting me do things or I'm having a hard time getting things done.
Exactly.
I'm still tipping away nicely. It's just not as, and rightfully so, it's just not as like, oh, this is the thing that everyone wants to do is this kind of, because for a while there, like every drama was just like this troubled kind of male or whatever.
Yeah.
But like the stuff that I love, the guys like Danny McBride and Jody Hill and stuff like that, they're able to do stuff without it being like Eastbound and Down or Vice Prince. But that's like, they're my, the highest kind of standards that I hold myself to, but they do stuff and it doesn't feel like it's romanticizing these like this kind of masculinity thing. It's completely lampooning it and pulling a rug out from it and showing it for what it is, which is just scared, pathetic man children. That's what I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that people appreciate that.
Yeah.
But.
And then do you talk much about like, you know, the way, because you have like, you literally, you're one of the only people I know who has like characters that like,
yeah,
like you completely inhabit, and like for example, like we were talking about doing a podcast.
Well, yeah,
you don't talk about that.
I know what you're gonna say,
but we can take all this out.
All right,
edit this out. I'm just
yeah,
Yeah, but is that a thing? Because I was like, I wasn't sure. But that's the thing, like, they're separate.
Yeah. He is. None of the rest are.
Yeah. Cool. Let's
try it as much as I can.
Give me that pen for a minute. I just want to write the time code down so I can get rid of it. But I was like,
hey, you're grand. You can leave it in. I don't think people have a clue what we're on about.
No, okay, fuck it. We'll leave it in then. But it's so interesting about, like, yeah, I suppose just that's like a rife enough thing, like, just to sit into that for that long and to be, I don't know, just as, like, comfortable in that world. Like, what kind of, you said earlier that there are a lot of different types of, like, Irishmen that you just don't get on with. So, like, how much of when you were younger were you the kind of, like, you've got to be a real observer, I think, yeah, to be doing some of the stuff you're doing. Is that fair to say?
100%. Like, it's the most boring and standard answer ever. The Hardy books, two of the Hardy books guys, when I saw Hardy books, became obsessed and found out the two lads were blowns, and like, that's literally me, like, coming into a small, tight knit community where everyone is related at, like, whatever, I was like 6 years old, and then you're just like, you're always, it's not that you've been bullied or outcast or whatever, but you're always on the outside, you always have this perspective of, I'm at one remove here, and that is both a chip on my shoulder and also it gives me scope to be an observer. Mm. Be right. Like, I'm never, I was at home last week for a few days and it was great and all that, but you always feel like in the back of your head you're at one remove because your grandparents didn't come from there, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I think that's it's the most obvious reason why I am drawn to, like, really specific types of comedy and really specific rural types and just specificity in, like, characters in general. I just, that's kind of what I love. And I think I've gotten here for it. I think it's because that, simply that reason. Because it's, you hear about it from a lot of guys who do similar things, that they were like Martin and Chris Tordoff from Hardy Books, they were like from wherever they were in England, they came over and they were totally like embraced, and they were like, they have all their best mates and all that from that area, but they still have that like separation thing. So I think that's, it's as simple as that.
And where did you grow up and where did you come from?
South East Wicklow, so like Rathdrum was where I grew up, and like went to school, primary school in Avoca and secondary school in Arklow, and so it's like literally all within the same 15, 20 minutes of each other.
And when you came there from when you were six, from where?
Folks are from Dublin, born in Dublin, then in England for 4 years, from when I was like 2 to 4 or 2 to 6, and then back over. And like literally the bulk of my entire existence was in Wicklow. And like my best friends are all from Wicklow. Like obviously I've got other great mates now, but then like the people you came up with all from there, and like, that's where I feel. Someone asked me, it's like, I'm from Wicklow, obviously, and all the rest of it. But so I would consider myself from Wicklow.
Yeah.
But it's still, you know, you still have a bit of a chip about it.
Yeah, which is gas. Yeah, and I mean, like, is it something that you think about, like, for example, you strike me as someone who is, like, that's why I was asking you kind of, I suppose, about the being interested in, like, you know, men and masculinity, but then also, like, you know, adding in that Irish layer, because I think that just adds like more complications into it. What are your thoughts about like going away? Have you ever considered emigrating, or have you ever lived abroad?
I lived in Chicago for a year.
Did you?
Yeah, me and my girlfriend went, we had the graduate visa at the same time.
So I lived in Chicago for a year too.
Did you actually?
Yeah.
What year?
In DIT you can do a year away. You do this like scholarship exchange yoke to Columbia College in Chicago.
What year?
2014.
Yeah, what was it, 2018? Yeah. I think it was 2015.
But it was amazing. I love Chicago.
Oh, it's the best. It's, yeah. I'd go back there tomorrow. Like,
would you?
Yeah, I love it. Food, people, and just the city. Like, I was surprised how, like, easygoing it was, and how, like, I was working in the city.
Mm.
And I was just, it's just like, you just expect American cities to be, like, daunting and overwhelming, but it's, like, it's really chill. And the sound.
And could you see yourself, like, ever, even not necessarily Chicago, but just ever not living here?
Oh, yeah. Obviously, I said, like, I think my work tends to be pretty localized, and that's obviously a negative if you want to branch out. But if I could make, definitely, I would love to, and would hope to. But I think it's no harm to, you know, kind of for anyone to do it.
Mm.
Then again, I'd be happy just being in Ireland. You know, it's just a question of stuff not being here to work. Not being mm-hmm. here, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, sweet. Let's give it a spin. All right, here we go. Number 39. Do you have it?
No.
Number 39. What's your relationship to social media?
Bad. As in, I love it. Yeah. I love it so much. It's been good to me in a lot of ways. But it's also, it could be an old hindrance. In every other aspect where you're just like trying to get everything else done, and you know, it's I'm a lot better at it than I was, but yeah, I love like Twitter and that is good. You try and control like channel it now and just make it kind of, because people use it in weird ways, but in our kind of line of work, but like I like, you know, it's fun. I like, it's the most fun thing in the world. Like, that's the simple, but it's because you're just going to get instant gratification. You're going out, you're probably get instant gratification for this stupid thing you do.
Mm.
So, like, I get, like, there's no question to be, but it's going to be smart and be used relatively sparingly.
Yeah.
So you're not just a wrecked head who's, like, posting all the time.
Yeah. Is there a thing in, like, because you'd be much more ingrained in the comedy community than I would be, but is there a level of like cynicism about people who that's how they come to prominence, like via social media rather than via like that comes first and then like, you know, live shows come later?
Yeah, I think that's dying out, as all those like old school people are like, I'm sure they are giving out about that, but at the end they're probably irrelevant now. So it's like, who cares? It's like, I see people, if it's good content and inventive comedy, who gives a damn? Like, I'll use someone who I think is one of the most fascinating and talented guys going is Tony Cantwell, and he's got, like, he started, like, if people wrote him off for just being, oh, you're the soft drinks guy, the video, whatever. He did two or three nights in the Sugar Club, packed it out, with this one man show, and I went to it, and it blew me away. Like, it was like, let this guy do whatever. Let this guy, like, he's earned the right more than most people who've been jobbing for years, just based purely on like talent and the graft he put into it. So I think it's dying out. I think it's bullshit. I think if you're funny and hardworking, do it whatever way you can. Like, it's not like stand up. It's like people who have a dogma about things. I hate dogmas, and I understand why people latch onto them, but it's so limiting. It's like if someone's funny and good and a grafter, who cares how they started? Like, everyone started somewhere. It just wasn't necessarily the traditional route.
Mm.
No, I don't really think it's there. There's definitely like internet comics who people rag on all the time because they're shit, or because, you know, they're like clearly chasing a trend or chasing a thing, but like, They're not doing that about the likes of, say, Tony Cantwell, or like guys like Senan Byrne, out Kilkenny, and Steve Gall, guys who are just like clearly just doing stuff because they have a need to do it, and they're putting work in and been smart about it and are funny.
Yeah.
So I think it's, but then yeah, there's other people who, like, I think the right people are getting a kick and the right people are getting a pass.
Yeah, nice one. All right, sweet. Let's give it a spin. Here we go. Number 31. Do you have it?
No.
No worries. Number 31. What's your least favourite word?
Can't. No. That'd be why I tell the lad on inside the actor's studio. Can't. Afraid. Flap.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, it just came to mind. Like, I don't like the word flap.
That's good.
Funny word, but yeah.
The most common answer is by far moist.
Yeah. I thought of that and I was like, I'm not going to be a basic bitch.
Yeah.
But I don't mind moist. As well, I don't mind moist. Moist is grand. People are going to give moist a hard go.
But it's weird because, like, when you say flap, I'm immediately thinking of vaginas.
Fannies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not like wings. Because, like, flapping of wings is kind of
a weird word. Flap.
Flap.
I don't know. Actually, I take it back. Flap's a great word. My least favorite word is moist.
All right. Here we go. Number one. Do you have it?
No.
Number one. Do you believe in ghosts?
We were just talking about this at the weekend. I was down home. Because my ma, Rikichi, saw one. And she also... No, I won't tell that story. It's gas.
She recently reckoned she saw one?
No, like ages ago.
Oh.
When we were kids. I remember. No, I'm not doubting that story. But do I believe in ghosts? No. The whole psychic scar thing on places. It's so many people. It's happened to like so many people over history. It has to be a thing. People get vibes off places, and certain people are more attuned to those vibes than others.
Mm.
So I think that's a thing. But like spooky kids and all that. No.
Spooky kids. Do you think you're attuned to that sort of stuff?
No. Definitely not.
Would you like to be?
No. It sounds horrific. If I buy a house and someone was horrifically murdered in there, I don't want to know about it. You know, I probably would like to know about it. But if I also wouldn't mind living in ignorance about it and not feeling the horrible murder.
Every
time I walked into the kitchen where it happened.
Yeah.
A knife.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I think it's like hotels for me are a little bit, because just like so many people have stayed here.
True, yeah.
So many.
I don't get that at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Depends on the hotel. If it's a nice, like, really bright, modern one, maybe not so much.
Oh, like when you're staying, like some like random, like, boutique hotel that is, you know, like family run thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can be weird.
Really weird. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Out in the middle of nowhere, they can be very kind of eerie.
Yeah.
Carpets everywhere.
Exactly.
Carpets on the walls.
Way too many carpets.
Yeah. You're like, why is there so many carpets?
Just get a fucking wooden floor, lad.
Your voice just sounds like this every time you try to speak because there's so many carpets. Yeah, terrifying. No, fuck those places.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, but when you, as someone who doesn't believe then, like, so just say, for example, your ma or your mate or whoever it might be tells you a story.
Like, I don't believe. I'm agnostic, I guess.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like I've like seen, my ma has a story about, she was driving. I remember when it happened. We were in the car and she thought she saw some at this thing. And I think it might come out that someone was killed there. So I think that, who knows?
Mm.
It was like on the side of a road, basically. And someone got knocked over.
And why did she, like, what was the difference between, like, the thing she saw and, like, a person?
She described it as, how did she say it? Oh, she literally said it at the weekend. How she described how it looked. Not pixelated, but it was like, I can't think of the term.
Yeah.
The way she used it was like, it definitely wasn't like just a person standing there. It was like a weird effect happening or a weird look to it. So yeah.
Was it scary when your mom, when like you're a kid and your mom sees something? Because then you're like, well, it has to be a thing.
It wasn't scary as much as exciting. You're like, oh, if mom's a ghost and ghosts are real. And you kind of get excited. And then probably a bit scared because you're like, fuck, that's real. But like, I know I was very scared in general. So yeah, I was probably pretty scared. But I think it was mostly exciting because you're like, maybe ghosts are real.
Mm. Would you ever have any interest in, like, do you like horror films and like that as a genre?
Very bad for them. I'm kind of scared of them. Like, I'm putting off seeing that Hereditary film.
It's very good.
Is it? Yeah. No, I know. Like, I'm mad to see it just because it's meant to be amazing. But like, I'm bad for them. I try. Like, there's stuff on that's just come on Netflix now that I'm like, oh, I hear that's amazing. Like, Don't Breathe. I'm like, I hear that's amazing, but it's literally three kids in a house chased by a man in a dark house. And it sounds terrifying. And so I know I'll put it off for as long as I can.
Yeah.
But, I it wouldn't be my go-to genre, definitely. I love the idea of horror. I love the idea of the craft that goes into a great horror film. Like, it's one of the great kind of craftsman films, the type of films. So I love that about it. But yeah, they're a tough go.
It's really funny, we were talking earlier, because I was thinking about this recently. I was like, to think about the next like script, like screenplay or like, you know, pilot or whatever I want to write. And I was like, the great thing about comedy is like, I feel like you don't need anything to write it. Whereas like, I kind of have this like drama thing that I'd love to write, but like, I need to know about like the guards.
Research. Oh man, I hate it. I hate it so much.
Like,
it's just like, It's so boring.
And I just want to write.
It just becomes homework then, doesn't it? I'm the same as you. When it comes to that stuff, it's like, well, now I literally have homework. Because writing is like homework, but it's fun homework because you're just literally making stuff up. But when it comes to be like yeah, the guards. What's the right rank of a guard?
That's exactly what
who gives shit. You're like, ah. And then, but then you know that if you watch something that hasn't been researched or something and it matters and it falls short, you're like, well, come on. Just you could have done the due diligence there and find out what it was. So it is necessary, I think, mostly. Sometimes it's not, depending on what you're writing. But yeah, I don't think, as much as I love them, I'm never going to be like making a Michael Mann, writing a Michael Mann type of thing. Because like it's just so daunting.
Like there's certain shows and like you kind of take it for granted and then you're like, fuck, like this writer had to like, you know, there's a show coming out about Chernobyl and I was listening to it, the writer, and he's like, he read like, you know, like hundreds of books about Chernobyl because he had to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's like, right, well, that's a, then it becomes, yeah, as you said, a different thing because like you have to, especially if it's a real life event like that, you have to actually like make sure you kind of get it right. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Whereas if you just want to write your little like, you know, comedy drama that maybe like draws like the smallest bit from your life, the smallest bit, you can just use that as a little like, you know, architecture to build your house and
And you're like, oh, well, like I'm writing something pretty similar to my situation.
Yeah.
Like a mega, yeah, it's when it gets into things that are like, there's like specific careers or jobs, like, yeah, like where you need to get where the devil is in the details and you kind of have to know your shit and the way they speak and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, that's when it gets tough. Like one of the great ones for us, The Good Wife. You watch The Good Wife and you're like, have you seen The Good Wife?
No.
It's like, how is this not written by lawyers? Like they just, the way they speak and the amount of sheer jargon in each episode is like, and like the way they, obviously they're like heightened TV cases, but it blew my mind. It's like, I can love and appreciate a show like this, but I could never work on one because it's just, oh, that's, I would for something, you would do your research and your homework for it, but like it's stuff like that where it's like, where you feel like you have to learn about it, an entire way of working, where this whole like hierarchy of our system works, like the guards, like if you're writing something about like, you know, like you said, like a true life thing, where you just have to know so much about everything, it gets daunting.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny. And horror's different, but like I have no idea how like you write. It, because you know the way when you're writing something, you're picturing how it looks in your head. Like you've kind of seen the film in your head. So like then in horror, like it's, horror is really weird because like if you take all, you know, the music and stuff out of a horror movie, it's not scary. So like I think it's really hard to write that because you like to, I don't know, just write it like completely. Like, I mean, did you see Get Out, for example?
I did, yeah.
Like that's a really great example of like something that like, but I can see how he saw that in his mind as well. And he was also the writer-director, I think.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Which helps.
It helps, definitely. And, I don't know how. Like, it's one of the great challenges to do, like, a good horror film. Any horror film that is any way effective, it's, like, tougher than most films, I think. About Get Out, especially, if you're just, like, looking at something, it's just, like... But it's also, horror lends itself to, like, these kind of scripts that have no fat on them. And that's what Get Out was. Like, he wrote this lean, lean script where everything was, like, everything was building to the tone and everything was like exposition you didn't know you were getting and everything was like, everything was working towards the bigger picture, whereas obviously a lot of films now I find are just kind of not that at all.
Mm.
But I think horror film, you have to be like, I know what this film is about. The scary thing this film is about, everything on the page is like driving that idea or like, or building that up, like in obviously and I think Get Out did that really well.
Yeah, big time. It's kind of incredible. Oh my god, I don't want to say Get Out, but Aaron, you're going to have to edit some of this. Ah,
so they have to learn, the yoke.
Fuck me, that was an ordeal. Number 11, do you have it?
No.
Number 11, do you ever wish you were born as the opposite gender?
No, never. I would hate it.
Would you?
Yeah. For all the obvious reasons. Just be like, oh, someone gonna kill me today. Someone gonna, you know, it's just, you know, it's like, and if I elaborate on it, I'll just say like some woke sap, but like that's it's no fun. It's no crack whatsoever.
Yeah.
From living with one, especially, you're just like, they just have a hard go. It's just tough existence.
Yeah.
And any benefits that they get are pretty much all benefits that a lad gets. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it's great being a lad. It's brilliant. I love it so much. I'm thankful for it every day. I don't take it for granted.
That was so, I wasn't expecting as I don't know, just, you're sure of that.
Lads are deadly.
Yeah.
No, that's not what I meant. You can edit that out. Don't edit that. No, but just, it's just, it's way easier.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. Like, you know, even, you see someone like, Jordan Peterson obviously was here in Dublin this week.
I know very little about him, but I know that a lot of pricks like him.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I can guess kind of what he's about. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really fascinating though, like how these people have, like, literally because of kind of what, like, what kind of like a microcosm of what we were talking about earlier, in that sense of being like how it's really exciting to see the balance being restored in terms of like, stuff that's being produced like on telly, right? That's just a microcosm of it.
Oh,
but you could see how like someone would be like, well, fuck that. That's like, you know, three things in a row. Like, fuck that shit. This is absolute bollocks. But it's like, he's like, you know, tapping into that market, except
100%.
Not in like film and TV, in like every aspect of life.
But it's demented to me. If you were like, there's three shows about women, like, and people, obviously loads of people like that, you're like, it's like, it's so, like, it's so obvious that it doesn't bear repeating or saying, but it is like, wait, there's not, this is like, that's, if it was the other way around, no one would question it. People would question it, but they'd be like, they'd be told they'd been too PC, or they'd be too this, that, the other. So there's no, there's literally no win with those people. They're just shite bags, and they should just be, they should be screaming to avoid somewhere.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense. Like, it makes zero sense to me that people will get head up by that. They're still making whatever shows that you watch. They're just making this other stuff as well. It's not like they're like not make, well, you know, it's nonsense. Like, I wouldn't put too much stock in it.
Yeah, and as well, it kind of then implies that like something like Nowhere Fast doesn't deal with any men's issues, which it absolutely did. It
absolutely,
like,
did.
Really,
like,
interestingly,
the scene I'm
as well. Yeah,
about,
I know. Yeah,
I'm all about him.
Yeah,
the male character in it, and that, and a man's issue, or not a man's issue, but like in that issue, in that instance, it was a male issue, and like it's, there's not, yeah, it's like, it's just the second they see a woman on the poster, I guess, or a woman in the trailer, it just becomes, well, why, what, what's going on here? Why would I? No, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's really funny. Like, it'll be really, really, really interesting to see how, like, things start to play out, like, over the next, like, to actually be even more interesting is, like, when, like, our generation of people start to become the people who are, you know, commissioning stuff.
Yeah.
And programming stuff, because that's not very far away.
No, you're right. I just think, I think it's got to become just, like, without thinking, almost, people are just going to be like, well, this has to have this, that, the other. It's got to, because we're going through the phase now, the awkward phase of, like, people are screaming, why isn't there a black person in your thing? And it's like, it can be a bit like, oh, it's just because it doesn't need to be, it just doesn't mean. But that'll all level out, and then it'll become like, oh, well, you should have this, that, the other. You know, it'll become a part of making entertainment, making art, where you're just like, well, everyone should be represented. So let's, you know, even if it's not like historically accurate, or whatever the hell reason people use not to cast XYZ, you know, I think it'll go on. Like, I saw, like, it's like Les Mis and your man David Oyelowo, or he's playing Javert for like some BBC show of Les Miserables, and then I'm sure there's like a bit of an outcry, but there isn't much really, like, you know, like, oh, why would a black man be, you know, a guard in France then? And but I think that kind of thing is like edging away a bit.
Yeah, exactly. That, like, I remember hearing something similar, and it was a black guy was playing Javert in the musical, and people were a bit outraged, and he was like, yeah, lads, like, you can be outraged about that, but then, like, it's like, why is the guard singing with, like, an 80-piece orchestra going?
Exactly.
Like, if we're going to be, like, about details here, like, there's other things, like, this is a fucking musical, calm down.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, man, that's the correct response. Like,
It's just made up, like, it's all made up stuff. So let's don't worry about it.
Yeah. And it is really interesting then coming from somewhere like, you know, having you lived in Chicago, and then you just see like what, like proper, like just, I guess, just how diverse a community exists there, especially within like the arts world. And I know that they even have problems with diversity, where they're still like, yeah, but it's not like, you know, I don't know. I'd imagine like there's, like, is there more black people in Chicago than white people? Probably.
It's something like, it's got the most split. Yeah. Like, it's like whatever the hell, 50-50 split. Like, there's as much of one as there is the other almost, but it's also the most ghettoized city of Mary. And it's got insane rates of gun death. And, like, and you walk into any Target or wherever the hell in there, and it's mostly black people working like, the jobs that the white people don't want to do. So, like, there's a very, very, Chicago is, like, there. You just see there's a really clearly defined social class thing going on, and it's purely race based. Like, it's pure, like, economic, but it all comes back to race, I guess. It's just like, you see black people working on one level, white people are working on another level, and it wasn't particularly surprising when you're there, because you're used to kind of hearing about that stuff. But it's very like, you see in Chicago maybe slightly more than other places, it's a bit like jarring, and like becomes a thing. Like all the CTA workers on the transport, like the trains and stuff, they're all gonna be black. Your bus driver's gonna be black.
Yeah.
So it's can't remember what the point was. But yeah.
Yeah, no, that's 100% right. Right, come here. We have time for one more. So
do it.
Let's give it a spin. All right, here we go. Number 46. Do you have it?
56, 48. No, I don't.
No worries. Number 46. Kind of a nice way to end, actually. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
I don't have a notion.
Do you like advice? Do you ask for advice?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it depends who you're getting it off. But, yeah, obviously. The best piece of advice.
Is there anything like you come back to or think about or wrote down?
There's so much to do with, like, I don't know. Stuff to do with work ethic and stuff like that. I do think about that. I can't think of exactly quotes, but like, just like, you have to put the work in effectively. Like, whatever it is you're doing, you just kind of need to put the time and work in. I don't know. I have nothing more profound than that coming to mind. But that's just thinking about stuff that you try and live by. I don't know. So don't do drugs.
That's good.
Yeah.
What about with you know, then when you're sitting down, right, and you're gonna write a play with John Morton, for example, because the Hellfire Squad I saw. John Morton?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, do you? Oh, all right. Well,
I'm massive on it. No, I didn't.
You're gonna
go on. Yeah, I do. Yeah, we're sitting down to write sellout show, the Hellfire Squad.
Yeah.
Brilliant show with the John Morton, probably the person who gave me whatever the best advice I ever heard was.
Right. So, sure. What the, like, how does that, because then you've got to, is it a case of, then you've got to match each other's work ethic? Does that make sense? How does that work in terms of...
You can't match John Morton's work ethic, because he's the hardest working person you'll ever meet. But what you do is, you try and just nip at his heels, basically. You're just not going to have... like that, it's just as simple as that. The man is the heart. Like it's insane. It's insane. There's no way of matching it. So all you can do is like, well, I'll just do the most I can do. And whereas before, if you're working with someone else, you'd be like, we'll just do a bit here, and it'll be easy to get distracted, or easy to just go off. Whereas in that instance, it's like, you know, you do the most work that you can feasibly do, on the thing in the time that you have.
And then, when you weren't in that play, what was the choice behind that? Was there...
Which play?
The Hellfire Squad.
I was.
You were?
Yeah.
You were in it?
It's on my phone. I'm on the poster.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. There I am there. I have a little ratty tat.
Yeah. That's such bad form. I thought you weren't in it, and I was going to ask you why. But you weren't.
There was a while where I wasn't going to be in it, because I didn't have much in the way of stage experience for like 10 years before that. And just different reasons. Like, I just wasn't... there was just, yeah, just like, why would we put you in? There's lots of deadly actions in Dublin. And yeah. Then eventually it just got to the point where it's like, we were so clearly right and apart from me. They were like, John said it, like, he's like, will you do it? I was like, yeah. And it was the most fun I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
But the next play we wrote is a follow-on to Hellfire Squad. And I won't say too much about it, but it's all female cast. So obviously we didn't write for either of us. And we would, or me, myself personally, I'd love to just exclusively be writing for not me.
Yeah.
Like that's, I love that. Yeah. I think that's the purest type of writing. And we both do the other thing a lot, mostly. But I would love to be doing more where it's just like, right, are you similar?
I totally agree. I'm writing the first thing now that I don't want to do. Like, you know, my first instinct isn't to do it anyway. Like, it's for someone else to do it. And it's great. It's really freeing.
Because I always feel like if you're writing something and you're in it, it immediately, even if you didn't start off with that intention, you're like, oh, this is just a vehicle for you. And it suddenly becomes less. It's like when I did the thing Personal Space there in January, me, Stephen Colfer, Hannah Mamas, and we all wrote it together. Like, me and her wrote one, me and him wrote one, and the two of them wrote another. These three little short plays, and put them on. And it just, I was like, the perception here is just like literally, we're just doing a little showcase and we're like, this is us, this is what we wanted to play, this character, and we wanted to do this type of monologue or whatever, where it was literally like, let's just come up with, we're all at the end, we're all writers as much as we are actors, so we're like, let's come up with good solid little half hour short stories, and yes, being them, but like, I just was so self-conscious that it just seemed like we were just doing our little showcase. And I think that everything you do that you're in and you also wrote, there is a little whiff of vehicle about it, or showcase, or even if that's genuinely not the intention and the final product doesn't reflect that, I think, I don't know, maybe that's literally just one of my many chips, I think, just coming to the fore here and being like, telling me that. But I much prefer, I love writing things for actors. Like the thing I'm doing in August, that's for actors. I'm not in it at all, and I just can't wait to just, there's nothing better than hearing actors sell your joke or nail your little your scene and make it so much better than it is on the page. And and it's harder work as well, because it's easy to do actually your own stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Do you think, like,
yeah, no, I think you're right. I think you're right.
No, not like, obviously you can write yourself tough things to do, but in terms of like, there's less work to be done, and therefore there's less things to find out about, and there's less kind of avenues to go down.
Well, we're going to wrap it up because we've hit our hour, but why don't you tell the people about the show in August? Because I know that's a thing.
It's called Copperface Jacks the Musical.
Okay.
It's with me, Rosanna Purcell, and some other people. No, it's called Pulp Injection. It's in August the 14th, Tuesday, August the 14th, downstairs in the Workman's. It's 2 half-hour radio plays. If you saw the original version of it in Seen and Heard there, it's basically that, but 2 all-new plays. So come along because you haven't seen them before. It's basically 2 half-hour radio plays in the style of like old-fashioned like serials, like radio adventures, and kind of one of them is about a propaganda type. It's as if Eamon de Valera commissioned a propaganda radio show about him and Archbishop Charles McQuaid as a crime-fighting duo, and that stars John Morton and Kelly Shatter, and then as the two characters, and then an amazing cast around them, and then the same 10 actors will carry on into the next play, which is kind of like a film noir type thing, but they're all like very much spoofs. They're all very much like, I love that genre of stuff, but like they're very like, it's all about the jokes and the kind of the mad characters and all that. There's no, you're not coming to see a bigot thing. It's all, it's pure, it's good crack. To be pints, it'll be mighty. I can't wait to do it. So that's in August the 14th.
Brilliant. Peter McGann, thanks so much for playing Personality Bingo.
Thanks a million, Tom. Thanks for having me. That was good.
So that was the hilarious Peter McGann playing Personality Bingo. Peter, if you're listening, a massive thank you to you for taking the time to do it. It was an absolute pleasure to sit down and have the chat. And as I said, go and check out Pulp Injection at the Workman's. I'm going to be there. It's going to be absolutely savage. As I said, doors are at 8 o'clock, show at 8:30, and tickets are available from eventbrite.ie. It's going to be gas. I like the cast is unreal. So many former guests of the show as well, which is always nice, in the form of Ali Fox and John Morton. So go and check it out. It's going to be a little personality bingo party. As I said, last few shows of Copperface Jackson Musical, it's been an incredible summer. I have a feeling this mightn't be the end of the road for the show either. Fingers crossed we might make it back onto the Irish stage maybe next year. Who knows? But what a summer it's been. And as I said, if you missed it, shame on you, because it was a great laugh. But no, come here. Hopefully there'll be another chance to see it next year. As I said, if you want my voice for your business, check out voicebank.ie. I've just become represented there by the wonderful Deborah Pierce. So that's a bit of an honour to be in such esteemed company. And yeah, as I said, as if all this chat on the podcast wasn't enough. So before I let you go, a couple of quick thank yous, as always, to the wonderful Erin Lindsay for mixing, editing and producing this podcast. She is the boss woman and she does an incredible job. Erin, thank you. To the brilliant Liam Moore and Anthony Manley for our deadly theme music. And as always, to the excellent Connor Nolan for the beautiful artwork. It's always a delight to be a part of the Headstuff podcast family. Exciting things happening here as well that, you know, I'll be able to keep you in the loop about very soon. But as always, a huge thank you to Alan Bennett and Paddy O'Leary. So, guys, that's all from me. Thanks so much for listening to Personality Bingo with Tom Morin. Tom Morin's Personality Bingo. Tom Morin's Personality Bingo.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.